Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart. But we didn't stop there. We combined soft and bouncy to bring you new Sweet Tarts Gummies Fruity Splits, a uniquely delicious dual-sided gummy with one side that's sweet and one side that's tart, but entirely smooth and squishy. A powerfully perfect combo. Sweet Tarts. Dare to combine.
Locked into the Zone with Diamonds and Roses podcast, bringing you one step closer to Pacific Northwest and Southwest Canada baseball news, stories, and history. Proudly fueled by Baseballism, they're America's brand, and Devo Bat Company, professional wood grain bats for the love of the game. And now your hosts, Ben and Travis.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Diamonds and Roses podcast. As always, I am your host, Ben. We are on to season 4, episode 3. We've had two great episodes for you this year so far. We're on to another great one, and we're bringing in you none other than the play-by-play master of the University of Portland Pilots, Brian Slyke. He's joining me today. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited to be here, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I really appreciate you joining me. And I remember for the first time hearing you on the radio and actually on YouTube or Facebook at the time in 2019, the inaugural year for the West Coast League's own Ridgefield Raptors and you calling games. And as I was preparing for this, I went back and I listened to that because I put your name into YouTube and it popped up. And I'm like, I remember that voice. And then I'm like, man, he sounds way different than he does on the radio. So you talked a little bit about that in a minute ago. But you said that you do get that a lot.
Yeah, I've gotten that a couple of times. I think anybody who talks to me outside of my work, outside of my business and stuff like that, I'm a bit more laid back, more casual. I'm not so prompt or articulate, I guess, at times. I feel like when I'm on air, I feel like I need to fill out my voice a bit more. It just doesn't sound the same. So yeah, I've gotten that a couple of times. Strangers meeting me at the ballpark, they see my name tag saying Brian Slyke. It's like, it sounds a bit different than what I'm used to hearing. Especially at University of Portland this year, they're broadcasting our games on the concourse. So if you're just at the game, you can still listen and hear us. And so, yeah, I've had a couple of people do come up to me and say that.
Nice. So, Brian, let's get into some of your past history real quick. You're originally from the Midwest, right?
That's correct. Yeah, I'm originally from outside of Chicago, a city called Naperville. It's about 30 miles mm-hmm. west.
Are you a Cubs fan or are you a White Sox fan?
Cubs fan. I grew up Cubs fan. First baseball game I ever went to was in second grade. Unfortunately, I fell for a losing team at that time, too. They lost 10-1 to the Cincinnati Reds. But yeah, a Cubs fan for life, but I'll never turn down a cheap ticket to go to a White Sox game.
Ah, really, going to Wrigley Field, it's like one of the oldest ballparks that are still remaining on my bucket list of places to go. But who's been your favorite Cubs player that you've liked to watch?
Man, my favorite Cubs player. I mean, as a kid, I don't think there's any other choice than Sammy Sosa. He's the one that really got me excited and into baseball. I mean, I was born in 93, so that whole home run chase was when I was 5, 6, just starting to get into sports.
With
so,
him and McGuire.
Yeah, so that was a very big imprint on my sports life at that time. So I'd have to say probably Sammy Sosa. You know, I really, it's going to sound kind of weird because he was only on the team, I think, 1 or 2 years. But that 03 season, I was a really big fan of Kenny Lofton. And what?
Oh,
he was
yeah.
Doing. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Mr. Cleveland.
Beat off. Yeah.
I remember Kenny playing the, when they played the Braves in the World Series, they had a really good, him, Albert Bell, and Pedro for a little while. Yep. They had a really good team
yeah.
in Cleveland. But back to Chicago. How did you get to be a Chicago Cubs fan? You know, two teams to pick from. Why the Cubs?
You know, I think being around, my oldest brother was not a huge sports fan, but my middle brother, he was always into sports. And so I kind of just gravitated towards what he was doing a lot of the time. And, you know, his friends and him would talk about the Cubs a lot. You'd see them on TV a bunch. I mean, it was, you didn't need cable to watch the Cubs. They were on WGN. So it was easily accessible, and it just always seemed like a fun time. You know, every time you looked at the bleachers, whenever the camera decided to pan that way, everybody genuinely seems to be having a good time while they're there. And I think that played a factor into my fandom, is how to be accepted. And also, you know, $5 bleacher seats never hurt either.
No, nope, not at all. Did you play baseball as a youth, or was that just not within your wheelhouse?
Yeah, I played baseball I played T-ball. So when you're 4 or 5 years old, all the way up till high school. I stopped playing in high school to go down a different avenue in life. I decided to play volleyball instead, which actually ended up being great because I played that in college. But I stopped playing baseball because a coach that was a freshman coach was the basketball coach and football coach I had in middle school. And I'm not saying we weren't friendly or whatever, but sometimes just butt heads. And I just knew that wasn't the route that I wanted to go anymore, and decided to try something completely new, a sport I'd never even played, and just started to jump into volleyball. And I don't regret it. Baseball is still a passion of mine. I love it. I love being around the game. You know, occasionally I miss getting the diamond and taking a couple hacks, but for the most part, yeah, I stopped playing in high school, but I don't regret it.
Yeah. And what position did you play?
All over, man. I had a lot of speed when I was a kid, so they had me roaming the outfield. I got to say, nothing more exhilarating than diving and trying to make a catch. Third base, I was there a lot until, frankly, I just didn't want to be there anymore. I got hit in the face a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
You know, uneven ball fields on Little League. You could have hot one off the ground and takes a bad skip, and it caught me in the face. And that happened, I don't know, 2 times, and that was one time too many for me. And pitcher, I loved being on the mound. Fastball, slider, circle change was my business. And probably one of my more fond sports memories was pitching and complete game two hitter back in Pony, I guess is what it was. Yeah.
Wow. Well, there you go. That sounds like a excellent time right there. I remember some of my early days and being able to pitch back when I felt like I was good.
Yeah, right. I'm not saying I was good by any means. I was just, that was one good start for me. Yeah.
No worries. I think we've all been there. You know, those of us that have played that don't play anymore, wish we could play, but I'd probably get out and pull a hammy, try to run to first.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you talked about me being with the Raptors. I had a chance to just be on the field with them and play catch. And that was a lot of fun. But I also realized that I'm not the same baseball athlete I used to think that I was. And the kids that are 10 years younger than me are certainly outperforming me.
So you stopped playing baseball and you went to volleyball, but you got into doing play by play.
Yeah.
Talk that transition. How, like, what drew you to it? Like, why play by play sports?
So this may sound weird because a lot of people don't decide on what they really want to do when they're kids. But in second grade, I realized I wanted to do play-by-play work. I met Pat Hughes, so that was another reason why I was a big Cubs fan. He's the Cubs radio play-by-play broadcaster. And At that moment, I just thought, you know, how awesome would it be? Just your job is to show up to the ballpark or to the field, to the pitch, whatever it is that day. And what if somebody just pays you to watch a sport and talk about it? And I just knew that is exactly what I wanted to do in my life. It's taken a very long time. And I still have a long ways to go from what I would be, what I would consider myself successful. But yeah, that started all the way back in second grade. In high school, they allowed me to call our local, you know, boys and girls basketball games. And then I also started doing the morning announcements every single day just to prep myself to talk in front of people. I didn't really speak until I was about three or four. So I was a bit of a late bloomer when it came to that. So I was nervous speaking in front of people. But the ability to do the morning announcements every single day for however many days you're in school, 200 plus days a year, and doing that for 4 years. I mean, the first day I did it, if you had a recording of it, you could hear the paper shaking that I was reading off of. I was so nervous when I was reading it. But, you know, that helped shape in what I wanted to do. And then I went away to college, played volleyball for 4 years. Realized I still needed to get the reps that I wanted and that I needed. And, you know, I went to Central Michigan University, so they've got a broadcasting school there. And, you know, I did my tryouts. I was one of, I think, four people that was on rotation for both baseball and softball. And then they would send you out on the road. And so that's where I really started to get true reps in baseball and softball. It escalated from there. It took a couple of different jobs after school, went back home, worked for Northern Illinois calling softball for them. And then that's sort of relayed into me making my way out west to the West Coast League for the second time, actually. You know, certainly did not plan on how I got out here or anything like that. But it took a lot of perseverance, a lot of self-confidence, and a lot of gambling on myself. To get into the position that I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can get behind the mic as being a podcaster is like one thing. Anybody could do it. And, you know, but it's just how you go about like doing it. And I got to give you, you know, even more credit because it's just like, you know, people just, I record what I'm doing, like I'm doing right now. And then I can go in and edit it. But when you're in that moment and you're live and you're actually calling it play by play, you clearly got to be cognizant of like what you're saying, like how you say it, and just your level of awareness. Does it come easier over time that it just becomes like normal to where you know like, I know I'm not going to say X, like a swear word or something live, like on radio.
It's pretty simple. I mean, some easy self-control, like when it comes to swearing and things like that. Also, it's just like one of the number one rules I learned first day of broadcasting is the mic is always hot, even when it's not. So always be aware of what you are saying, because even though you may not think that it's hot or nobody's listening, somebody's always listening. And I think, what's his face? Brenneman. Yeah, the guy from Cincinnati. He's prime reason of why you should always know that the mic is hot. You know, it's difficult at times if you're not used to it. You know, the first time I did it, you're conscious of it. You're thinking about it. And you're right. The more reps you have, the less you think about it because you get into a groove.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not worried about censoring myself when I'm on the air because I know time, place, and what I'm doing. Like, I don't think anybody goes into a sporting event and thinking, you know, I might be swearing or something like that. But always keeping yourself in the moment. I don't know if you've how often you've listened to me broadcast, but like I'm constantly reminding people of what is happening because you need to know what the situation is in case mm-hmm. this happens, or if this guy decides he wants to bunt down the left side down the third baseline, you know, that completely changes how the infield's going to be doing something. So it's just staying in the moment, really.
But you're a storyteller. Like you, you're what you're doing is you're telling a story, and you got to use those words for people to like, okay, listen to what Brian's saying. He's saying this, like, oh, right field, you know, or crack of the bat, you know, or this. And so you get that sense of like what's going on. I mean, to your point about like always reminding people, because you're essentially a storyteller is what it is.
Yeah, always. I mean, your words are so powerful in that position, because one thing I learned, excuse me, but like if you said you watched on Facebook and in YouTube, well, somebody's not always watching. Like sometimes it's on in the background. So, you know, being a bit more descriptive, even though there is a visual, has a benefit to it. Do you do overkill with it? No, you try not to, because there is such a thing as information overload. But, you know, there's a point to being a good storyteller to map out the main points so that everybody knows it without over flooding you with information. You know, mm-hmm. bullet points works best. I don't need a whole paragraph, things like that, to tell you what's happening.
So you've given some really good insight into it so far. But if I, like for me, or somebody who's aspiring to be in this particular area, I'm not saying I'm calling play-by-play, but what I'm doing is like in the podcasting world, telling that story so that people keep coming back, wanting to listen. Like, what are some pointers that you would give to just anybody to say, if I could give you one or two basic rules, here are some things that I want you to take away that I've learned and that I want to share with you.
When it comes to baseball specifically, prep is important. When I do a broadcast, I'm usually, you picture about how long you're going to do it. For me, basketball is about 2 hours at the University of Portland. Baseball, you can guess that's about to be 3 hours or so. You should do about that much in prep work. And you probably only use 15 to 20% of it. But it's important to have that type of information when you're calling a game, because there's so much happening in the game that, hey, you did that research. There's one thing that just happened. This guy's on second. And you go, oh, well, that's a seventh double of the year. He's now team high, yada, yada, yada. Well, if you don't do your research, you're not knowing that. Or you're flipping through your paper and, oh, you're onto the next bat and you're already pitched deep. And then you're throwing out that fact. It's important to have all that stuff already prepped for you. I'm not saying having papers around by is bad, because if you ever look in my booth, I don't know if you saw inside or not at Ridgefield, but the wall is just littered with taped up paper with their season stats or some other info. But that is also research that I've done. So making sure that you have all that prep time.
I got to imagine, like, if you're with that one particular team, it should be a little bit easier because you're there watching like their games, probably, obviously, if you're going on the road, like watching them on the road. Mm-hmm. But you feel like you're spending more time prepping for the opposing team because of all of the research you got to do for their players?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to do overkill and try to, you know, find some more information after 7 weeks of being with the same team and calling the same guys. I mean, there's no point in doing that. Now, I will say there's never a bad time to try to talk to the guys and get some more information out of them that you can't find elsewhere. You know, that's what I found really valuable in Ridgefield, was the fact that we were on the road a lot. And so that gave me a lot of time I was always rooming with three other guys. You know, you're on the bus with them the entire time, so you really get to know the guys, get more inside stories. Like one of my favorite stories, I went and got lunch with one of our kids. His name was Trask Telesmanich. He's like, well, I never say my real name in public, because every time I do it, somebody says, I was like, what? And I got to repeat myself? He goes, yeah, I just go by my dad's name, Leon, because I say Leon. And, you know, he's an engineering student, so he figured he'd probably save about 30 minutes on his life by just calling himself Leon and saying Trask to everybody else and then repeating himself. Mm-hmm. Like, those little fun tidbits are things that you pick up by talking to your players. But you're right. When you're with a team for so long, you spend a lot more time trying to figure out what is happening with the other team. Mm-hmm. Working with the West Coast League, you know, I'm digging for information hours after the game just ended for the next game that starts tomorrow against a new team. It's tedious work, I can tell you that much, but it definitely adds to the broadcast and it helps out a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like what you talk about, you know, when you're saying like going and like talking with the players, like having that personal, like one-on-one time. And, you know, it's like one of those things that like I've tried to do sometimes in my podcast, which is bring up, okay, well, what's your favorite movie? Like, if you could have one superpower, like what would it be? And sometimes those are like the icebreakers that you need, I feel, yeah, in my eyes, because like you're really putting in on like important questions and you're wanting to get to know more. But what I think my goal of this particular podcast is like, I want the people that are listening to feel like they're really getting to know the person, but mm-hmm. not just the person that they see at the ballpark or person that's like talking to a reporter. I want them to really get to see like, well, what is like, who really is that person? And, you know, it's like, I hope that when I do these, that, you know, people sometimes will let that guard down and really mm-hmm. like help me tell their story, because that's how I felt like it's the best to me personally, is that if the person really does tell their stories, and if you can ask those particular questions to get them to just relax and to tell it and to have a fun time. And then, you know what, it's better than me doing all this research on them and trying to explain it, because what better than the person? Sorry to go on a tangent there, but I disagree.
I got another thing to add on. You know, one of the first things I did when I was in Ridgefield and we finally figured out who was on our roster was, you know, I made my own personal questionnaire, and not only did I send it to them, I filled out my own. So the guys didn't feel like that it was just a complete stranger asking them to fill out all these questions and everything else like that. You know, you talked about some icebreaker things like, oh, like what would your walk-up song be? It's like, oh, well, I told him my walk-up song would be Yada 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 by Down With Webster, and why I chose that one. You know, what was my favorite sporting event and why I chose that one? Your parents, things like that. Just like mm-hmm. any little tidbit that could be fun to add in on a broadcast. You know, I made sure I filled out my own questionnaire, because it was important to me that they knew that it wasn't some stranger, that I was opening up to them as well as them opening up to me on the return. Mm-hmm. Not everybody responded to that email, which was fine. I didn't expect everybody to, but I would say a solid 80% did. And that really helped out a lot going, I think it's like 60 plus game season that they had.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially, you know, you being on a bus traveling with them, because, you know, you guys become this family. It's like that, it's that Bull Durham kind of feel. Yep. you're Kevin Costner sitting on the bus playing the guitar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't think people realize like how much of a mini brotherhood it is to play on those summer league teams. Now, granted, there are some horror stories mixed in there, but you know, like that Ridgefield Raptors team that first season, all those guys, they knew each other from some way or another, and just everybody clicked. Mm-hmm. There were some pockets of, you know, pitchers here and infielders here and everything else like that, but I mean, everybody was friendly and open to everybody else, and that made such a big difference in the broadcast and getting to know each other.
Well, let's talk about Ridgefield. Let's talk about how is it that you got the call saying, Brian, we want you to be our play-by-play?
So I've heard a couple different stories.
Gus probably told you a lot of them.
He told me one.
Oh, really? He told you only one. The guy's full of horror stories.
So I briefly mentioned this was my second time with the West Coast League. when I originally graduated college, I was working with the Port Angeles Lefties in what was their first season in Port Angeles. That did not go very well. That was not a super great experience. A lot of self-reflection and great experience in that aspect. But for work and getting into the business was a tough one for me. Not great support system there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I ended up going back home after being forced to live out of my car for a little bit and knew I wanted to get back into this area because I just loved it. It was gorgeous. And if you've ever lived in the Midwest for longer than a couple of weeks, it's flat, boring, cold, and just not overly enjoyable. But I knew I wanted to come back out here in this area. And Ridgefield was just starting up. West Coast League just announced that they were expanding to a new team in Ridgefield. So I reached out, introduced myself. At the time, I was talking to Jason Crone. I wasn't talking to Gus. And, you know, just told him a bit about me, that I was in broadcasting. I had my own equipment, which was, I think, the biggest factor in me getting the job. But just sending them my stuff and constant communication with them. And because I had my own equipment, they didn't have to rent anything from anybody. So it really just opened up in that way. I would say the whole process, though, took a couple of months. It was just a lot of back and forth with emails and trying to grow that trust between us and asking technical questions to make sure I could handle it and things like that. And Crony eventually sent me an email. I was like, yeah, we'd love to work with you. And I would say probably a couple weeks later, maybe a couple months later, I found my way out here into Ridgefield. And then now I'm here in Portland.
Yeah. You know, Ridgefield's that first season, it was a great season. You know, opening the Ridgefield Outdoor Center was, I mean, just the Rourke, very nicely done. And I know all the great things that Gus has planned for that, but, what do you think was probably your most memorable moment that particular season for you?
Like on the call or just as a moment in general?
Let's go both, actually, if you got examples of both.
I would say on the call, maybe it's the Rapetti Grand Slam in the second series, or the Aaron Zavala walk-off that he had in his first game with the Raptors, ended up being their first walk-off win as well. Those two, for me personally, I thought were moments where I took a next step broadcasting-wise. You know, the excitement of calling a Grand Slam and, you know, they take the lead, and it just changes the whole dynamic of a game. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize that when you're broadcasting a game is you really have to understand the flow and not to get too excited in moments where it's going okay. There's not a lot going on. But then there are other moments where bases are loaded, the tension is high, there's two outs right now, we're in the eighth inning, this guy's going for, you know, a six out save right now, and he's in some hot water. But like, those are the moments that were so exciting. And, you know, the Zavala walk-off, that was the first time I had ever had a walk-off, and calling that and letting it breathe and having the feeling of, you know, his teammates came out with the Gatorade bucket or whatever and gave him some of that as well. And personally, those two calls just stick out in my mind on importance to me, at least. My overall favorite time with the team, man, I don't know. 4th of July weekend was pretty fun. We were down in Bend for that, and Bend usually puts on a pretty good show, especially when it comes to the West Coast League. And, man, what else? There's a couple. I mean, opening night in the Rourke, that was incredible. Mm-hmm. You never know what you're going to get, especially with a brand new team in town. And
Were you there for the call? I don't know if you went and did any play-by-play up in Victoria, But when there was the 14 inning game that ran late and they couldn't catch the ferry back, so they had to go back the next day for a game at the Rourke.
Victoria did that?
I think that's when Victoria played. I might be wrong. Was it when Victoria played Ridgefield in Victoria and then had to travel down?
Oh, yeah. We played a late extra inning game in Victoria, and it was like a back-to-back series, but then they came back to us. Yeah. Yeah, that was a long, long trip.
You guys were like exhausted. That was my most memorable moment because I was there when both teams got off the bus. And it was like, you guys went like till 11 or later that night, like 14 innings. I think it was like a walk-off to win the game or something like that. And then you couldn't catch a ferry that night, so they had to get up really early to catch the next ferry into Port Angeles and then bus it down.
Yeah.
That was a memorable moment for me because I remember that specifically. And then I think you guys almost went into extra innings that night too.
We did. Yeah, we almost did. It was tied late in that game and almost went into extras. There was another long game for Ridgefield where I think it went 15 innings.
And that was in Bend, wasn't it?
No, this one was at the Rourke because I remember and
okay.
Proud of myself, but also not proud of myself. And the fact that I was getting really hungry. So I was just getting hangry that the game just kept going on. And both teams had opportunities to score and they both botched them. And so the game just kept going and going. And in between innings, I was like, gee, dang it. Like somebody just score so I can get some food in my stomach, calm down a bit. And then we'd flip back on. It's like, all right, well, welcome back to the Rourke. Brian Sly, Corey Keir here. And like, you wouldn't notice that I was moderately annoyed that the game was going on. I was getting hangry, but it was all in good fun though. I mean, if you listen to me at Portland with Corey Keir as well, he's my broadcast partner at UP, but you know, we bring up Ridgefield a lot. You know, there's a lot of fond memories with my time in Ridgefield. And
I had to ask you about that 14-15 inning game in Victoria. And then traveling, because that was a memorable moment for me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I wish I had I keep all my scorebooks with me so I can go back and look. I wish I had it right next to me.
I'll have to come to a UP game and take a look and I'll let you know when I'm going so I can take a look and we can talk about that particular game.
Yeah, definitely.
But let's take a break from the tough questions and let's go into some of the fun questions. So the icebreaker questions, like I always talk about, but let's get to know you a little bit better and in a different way. You know, what's your favorite baseball movie?
Favorite baseball movie. Rookie of the Year.
Oh,
Rookie of the Year is a classic, especially, you know, being a kid watching that movie, you want to be him. I mean, you're hoping you break your arm and you become a major league pitcher, right?
Yes. You're like slapping the doctor.
Yeah, right.
Taking his nose.
Yeah, I'd probably say Rookie of the Year. Benchwarmers was always a classic for me. I enjoyed that one a lot. That was like right in my wheelhouse when it came out. Cause I was, I feel like I'm dating myself, which is weird, but 12, 13 when that movie came out and I was all stars at that time with a bunch of my buddies. So we would watch that movie and so Benchwarmers. I mean, if you really want me to get technical, I mean, I'm a big movie buff, so you can't see it, but off screen, I've got 300 movies to my side. There's a lot.
There are a lot of really good baseball movies out there.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with my choice with Rookie of the Year, but there's a ton. Like, I love Moneyball. I know that one's not totally baseball because it's more just like watching the analytics and the front office.
Yeah, side. But it is baseball, though, because it's about what they did in Oakland.
Yeah, so like that one, I like that one a lot, too. That one's probably up there.
Who do you think did was the best character in a baseball movie? Like, what actor do you think did the best?
And Bull Durham, probably.
Yeah.
I mean,
classic.
I think of anybody else that would.
I mean,
I liked Roger. Who was it? Barry Pepper played Roger Maris in 61. I really liked that. That was a good movie.
Major League's probably got the best quotes of all any movies.
Oh, that's the most quotable movie, without a doubt. I mean,
yeah. I think the guy, Willie Mays Hayes, is like probably my favorite character.
Yeah.
You may run like this, but you hit like shit. I think that's one of like my favorite lines.
No, there's this, there's too many. Yeah, I'd probably have to go with Costner, though. Costner's probably my favorite character from a baseball movie in Bull Durham.
Okay. And then if you could have played in one movie as any character, what movie would that be?
I mean, I think I already answered it earlier.
Oh, okay. So you want to be Henry Roland Garden.
Yeah. But here, let's go with a different one. If I could pick anybody, be anybody. Man, I don't know. Now that you ask baseball movies, like all these things.
You could probably be a good Squints from Sandlot.
Yeah. Squints for sure. Yeah.
He's an L7 weenie.
He's an L, yeah, exactly. I probably fit in that movie quite well. I can't handle my chaw either. You know, it's never been a thing for me.
Yeah. So my kids watch that movie all the time, and my son just absolutely laughs when they're just losing it on the twisty ride there. It's like, oh my god.
The first time I had ever done that, I don't know how people regularly did that. I was constantly focusing on having to spit it out. Yeah, yes. I don't even touch that stuff. It doesn't end well.
Well, that was some fun questions, and I appreciate you taking some time to have some fun with me on that. Well, we're getting into the tail end here. I know there's a lot of other things that we gotta go, but I want to be cognizant of your time.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But you know, let's talk about University of Portland. You've been there. How's that going? Like, you know, what is it like to be, you know, an announcer at University of Portland for yourself?
Honestly, it's incredible. They have given me so many opportunities that I was not expecting or prepared for so fast, at least. I mean, that the University of Portland came at an opportune time. It was just as the West Coast League ended, and people enjoyed my work there. That Coach Valentine, who is the coach at UP.
Yeah. Good guy.
Yeah.
Good
great guy.
Friend of the podcast.
Yeah. I still need to go get a beer for him because he helped me get the job at UP from what he heard up in Ridgefield. My host family, he was a graduate of UP. He sent in a letter without me knowing to the athletic department saying, hey, you should probably hire me. And then, Michael York, he was a player on the Raptors, but his dad works down at University of San Diego. And he, too, also wrote a letter. And so, you know, these people, without my knowledge, put in such a good word for me, which was flattering because, you know, you never know how you're doing on a broadcast until somebody says something to you. But, yeah, so I ended up getting the baseball gig right away, and they found out that I played volleyball in college. So that became an easy transition to say, hey, we needed a volleyball voice as well. Could you do that for us? And I was more than thrilled to do that. I just had never called it before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knowing the terminology, knowing the game is one thing, but having to call it mentally put me in a pretzel for a few hours, just as I was trying to prep on like, how am I supposed to do this? I was way overthinking it. But I love it. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
Great experience still doing it. And then, you know, Travis Demers, he left men's basketball at UP, and now he's doing the radio stuff for the Blazers. So that opened up that position. And then the women's voice ended up moving east back to, I want to say, New York. And so that opened up all of these opportunities for me, and they all sort of just fell into my lap, and I could not be more gracious.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to put it. I mean, I've...
Well, let me put it this way. Baseball is the baseball community is a family. And it's one of those things, like, you know, if you're in the baseball community and, you know, you're getting along with people and you're doing good things, the family takes care of itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing is you talk about family, and I said it earlier with Ridgefield, like those guys all got along so well. And I think that was all part of the first season that we were all experiencing that together. And just having that small knit family, like you say, really went a long way. I mean, I know I wouldn't be here if I didn't do the Ridgefield Raptors. That opened the door to the University of Portland and countless hours of reps and opportunities. Like I said, I mean, they allowed me to broadcast a basketball game on TV. I hadn't broadcast basketball since high school at that point. But they trusted me enough and I ran with it, and it's been incredible. It's been one of the most fulfilling moments career-wise for me that I can think of. I mean, each moment has been like, oh, I made my first paycheck, or all right, I made my first $100 for calling sports, and you think you're making your way up, and UP has continued to set the bar for me and allow me to grow and experiment with different things, and really introduce me to people that I don't think I ever would have the opportunity to talk to normally. I don't know how familiar you are with Ann Schatz at all, but you know, she's a pretty big name in women's sports, and she's helped me out tremendously, and because of UP. And I don't think that I'd be in the position that I am in right now. I probably wouldn't even be talking to you right now without the Raptors or working at UP.
Yeah. Speaking of UP, they did some renovation. You're back there. You know, what's it like to be at Joe Etzel Field this year with a brand new renovation?
I'd seen it beforehand and I liked it. And last year, it was a limited capacity to only parents and a couple of scouts per game. But this season I don't know really how to describe it. People have shown up in flocks and droves, and it seems like every single time we have a game, more people show up. You know, the renovation at Joe Etzel has been fantastic. You know, they upgraded the seats, the lights, the turf, everything. I mean, it's a real Division I ballpark. It's not, some rinky-dink field on the side anymore or anything like that. Not that Joe Etzel Field was, but just it is up to par with everything else that's going on around the Northwest when it comes to baseball. It's nice. It was a 7-year trip. It got done, but everybody's loving it so far. I know parents love it. Everybody that's coming in, you know, fan-wise, students, parents, just strangers really coming in, they've all loved it. I mean, you're close to the action. There's not much you can really miss. You know, there's certain parts of the ballpark where you can go down and even try to talk to some of the guys if you can. Not sure coach will allow it, but you know, it gives you that close knit feeling at the ballpark. And yeah, if you haven't been yet, highly advise it, especially on a sunny day, go find yourself on the right field berm. Put down a blanket or, you know, one of your grass seats or whatever, and just catch a ball game, because you're not going to find a better atmosphere in this area.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Ryan, I appreciate you, you taking some time to have a great discussion, you know, with me here, and thank you so much. And it's been wonderful to get to know you personally through this interview process on the podcast. So thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, of course, Ben. Thank you so much for allowing me to tell my bit of a story of myself. And if you ever want me on again, please don't hesitate. Gladly do it.
I'm sure we will work on getting you on yet again, and we can talk some more baseball. Maybe we could get you on, help me ask some good questions to somebody for a special episode sometime.
All right. I'm on board for that.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Diamonds and Roses podcast. I'd like to personally thank my sponsors, Baseballism. Thank you, Baseballism, for being there in the game. So go to baseballism.com, get some great swag. I know I do. I have a lot of it, a lot of great hats. And also Devo Bats, some great bats, the official bat of the Diamonds and Roses podcast. So you have yourself a great day wherever you are at. Brian, thanks for joining me. Have a great day and peace out.